Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. So here's a fun thing to notice. In The Hobbit right now, as we've been going through it, and as we will continue today, we are talking about the dwarves being captured by the elves. We have this moment of imprisonment. But it occurred to me, thinking about today's episode and how I was going to kind of organize everything, that they just went from being captured by the spiders, which was a much more dire and time-sensitive kind of situation. The spiders were going to eat them at any moment, to being captured by the elves, in which case they aren't about to be eaten, but they're not really going to go anywhere anytime soon. So they're still captured in both situations. And it also occurred to me, I was like, wait a minute. So we're going from one type of prison to another, but they've already been in a prison this whole entire time. As soon as they set foot in the forest, they were captured. The forest itself is a magical prison. It's a place where you go in and you don't expect, well, you hope to get out, but the forest doesn't expect you to leave. It's a dark, foreboding, terrible place. If you move anywhere off the path, you get lost. If you fall in the river or drink the water, you fall asleep. That's a prison of consciousness or unconsciousness. And then as you continue through, or at least as this party continue through, you come across spiders, which are looking to capture and keep you and eat you, and then you'll never leave. Or the elves, who are definitely not down with strangers, you know, crashing their parties. And so they're going to capture you and interrogate you and keep you from leaving. This entire time doesn't seem to work the way it should anywhere else. This entire situation is a prison with other ways of keeping you inside of it. So when you think about them being captured by the elves, this is just another way that the forest doesn't want to let anyone leave. And as I've noted before, this is a common occurrence with going into the land of the Fae, in fairy worlds in general. Confound humans who wander in. And one of the main ways that they do this is by breaking down the human inclination to use reason in order to deal with the situation. Time doesn't work the way it should. Space doesn't work the way it should. Everything that you can rely on your senses for seems to be used against you. That's how these kinds of other realms trap people in. But there is a way out, and there is precedent for this. If we look at the long tradition of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, we see similar events in those books, and I'm not going to go into a detailed description of all of that right here, but the thing to take away is the knights often go on these adventures. They deal with these magical beings, whether they are wizards or witches or dark lords who manage some sort of fortress. And in many of those situations, they find themselves imprisoned or baffled by the magical confines of their adventure, of where they've wandered into. And generally speaking, the way that they make their way out isn't through violence. It isn't through logicking their way out of the situation and convincing themselves that time is actually working the way it should, or those kinds of things. It's through a different kind of problem solving, being clever, being witty, maybe being a little bit lucky. And Bilbo has those in spades. He also has a magic ring that makes him hard to discover. Now, that doesn't mean that the situation's going to be easy. It also doesn't mean that the situation will be solved right away. When he dealt with the spiders, he basically solved the problem right there and then. He rallied everyone together. He cut them down. He was able to move them out of the situation. He was able to distract the spiders and use his wits to do it right in that moment. This is a very different kind of incarceration. This is the kind that Bilbo's going to have to take some time to figure out. So let's get into the details. Here we go. Poor Mr. Baggins. It was a weary long time that he lived in that place all alone, and always in hiding, never daring to take off his ring, hardly daring to sleep, even tucked away in the darkest and remotest corners he could find. That's how this section begins, and this is a stark difference between the way that the book portrays this and the way that this is portrayed in the movie, or at least the most recent movie. He seems to be able to solve the situation a lot faster, and they do imply in the film that time is going by, but how much time actually is going by? Is it days? Is it weeks? According to some of the sources I was able to find online that seem to chart out the different days, and this is something that Tolkien would have done on his own as well. He had an understanding of what day it was during different parts of not only this adventure, but in The Lord of the Rings. And it seems like this is on or around August 24th that they are captured. And it's not until September 21st that they escape. So nearly a month in these prison cells, eating crappy food, but at least not being hungry, not being able to communicate with each other, being kept in the dark a lot is another thing that's kind of implied here. So as we're going through this, imagine being in Bilbo's situation. He has to wear the ring all the time. And of course, The Hobbit is earlier, so we don't get visions of terrible things in his mind, or, you know, the awakening of Sauron to his location or anything like that. That doesn't really play out in this story. In a later story, it definitely would have been way different to have had the ring on for almost a month straight. But in The Hobbit, it's not an issue, so we don't have to worry about that. But also, Bilbo has to worry about where he's going to sleep at night, what he's going to do, how he's going to avoid the elves being detected at all, getting food, using a bathroom. It doesn't mention that in the text, but he has to be able to manage surviving for almost a month without any form of detection. And that can't be easy. These are elves. These, of any of the intelligent species in Middle Earth, would be the ones that might be able to detect him, or to sense that just something's wrong, something's off, they're being watched. And yet, these elves do not. Bilbo would even try to follow them outside in order to get out of this location on occasion, in order to see maybe what's out there, or find some food or whatever, but he couldn't keep up with them. He could slip out, it was very dangerous, but there was really no benefit to going outside. He wasn't looking to leave, he still needed to help his friends. And so he would just have to slip back in, again, undetected. And that always wasn't easy because he still cast a shadow. It says here, yet he did not dare to march among them, among the elves, because of his shadow, altogether thin and wobbly as it was in the torchlight. So not only did he have to avoid making sounds or accidentally bumping into one of them, but he also had to stay out of the light. Bilbo and the dwarves are relegated to the darkness. In this situation, they're going to have to be clever to find their way out. And this was miserable for Bilbo. I am like a burglar that can't get away, but must go on miserably burgling the same house day after day. And there's something that's deeply disturbing and sad about that, but also kind of funny. For the first time, he is seeing himself genuinely as a burglar. He's had to do some burgling types of things so far in the adventure, but for the first time, he is legitimately a burglar, and he is living as a burglar for almost a month, and yet is burgling the same house day after day. Now, but there are benefits here to that. He might find that boring, but at the same time, that allows him to survive, because he's able to understand the nitty-gritty details of the situation that he's in, exactly where he can hide, exactly when he can grab food, the order and movement of the guards, the day-to-day movement of elves just going about their business, when the food is going to be served, when the changing of the guards is going to happen, all of that detail is detail that he becomes deeply aware of. And the layout of this strange underground location, it begins to make more and more sense to him because he's spending a lot of time there. But it is not fun. This is the drearest and dullest part of all this wretched, tiresome, uncomfortable adventure. And then he begins to wish that he was back in his hobbit hole for the first time in a while. This is interesting because he was able to rise to the occasion when it came to the spiders. He was able to push himself to the very edges of his energy and his ability to manage and get through that situation. And yet now he's in a comfortable situation. I'm going to use that in quotes. He has a place where he doesn't have to worry about spiders eating him at any moment, although he has to avoid the elves, but he has food. He has a little corner or two or three that he can sleep in and avoid being detected. And sure, there's a lot of pressure constantly for weeks not to be discovered. But more than anything else, he's noting how bored he is. This is a different kind of prison. This is the difference between being at war and being under gunfire and explosions and mortar rounds and those kinds of things, which Tolkien experienced. But then switching to the more likely scenario, the scenario that most of the soldiers were in most of the time, were these moments of quiet and dread for when the next bad thing would happen. What's the famous quote about war? It's long periods of boredom punctuated by moments of sheer terror or something like that. I don't remember the official quote. But this is kind of what he's dealing with here. He's had to deal with all of this stress during this journey, all of the terrible things. And yet, what might undo him is boredom. That's what he wants to go home. He doesn't want to have to be stuck here anymore, but he also just doesn't want to be in this dreary and dull situation. But for all of its uncomfortableness, this might be the very situation that needs to happen to prove to him that he's the kind of person who might be able to sneak up on a dragon. He spends, as it says here, after a week or two sneaking around, he learns where everything is. He finds all 12 of their cells in different parts of the palace, so they're not even in the same location. They're kind of divided up among a broader area. And then he discovers, wait a minute, there's another dwarf here as well. He overhears a conversation. This dwarf is in a special, deep, dark place. And of course, he realizes that this is Thorin eventually. And he wouldn't have gotten that information had he not been so good at sneaking around. And yes, he has the ring, but that doesn't make it as easy as you might think. And then he's able to actually have a conversation with Thorin. Thorin was too wretched to be angry any longer at his misfortunes and was even beginning to think of telling the king all about his treasure and his quest, which shows how low-spirited he had become when he heard Bilbo's little voice at his keyhole. He could hardly believe his ears. Soon, however, he made up his mind that he could not be mistaken, and he came to the door and had a long whispered talk with the hobbit on the other side. Notice that he doesn't even trust the voice. He is in a situation where he is so wretched, so worn out, and just kind of beaten down by the whole thing that he doesn't believe what he's hearing. And that may be a part of this whole thing about being in this enchanted space and not being able to trust your eyes and your ears. But it's also a part of showing us how Thorin was almost going to give in. And I think many of us would reach that point in these kinds of situations. He couldn't come up logically with a way that this was going to work out. And so he was about to give in, just like the way that the forest as a whole treats its visitors. It baffles them. It messes with time. It wears them out. And Thorin was at the end of his ability to hold on. But when he finds out that Bilbo is here, everything changes. Bilbo was able to take secretly Thorin's message to the other imprisoned dwarves, telling them that Thorin, their chief, was also in prison close at hand and that no one was to reveal their errand to the king. Not yet, not before Thorin gave the word. Bilbo is communicating between all the prisoners here. And that, again, this may seem like something that feels obvious. Well, of course, Bilbo would take the message. He would tell each of them when it was safe, get them all on the same page. But you have to understand that the thing that they've done by dividing up the dwarves is to take away their ability to communicate. This is how imprisonment works. It's not just about being stuck in a location. It's about limiting options. Anybody who plays strategy games knows that when you are first learning a game, before you even understand all of the systems, one of the best ways to get a leg up on the competition, especially if other people are just learning that game as well, is to always go with the option, the decision that increases your options. This is a strategy for making sure that you then have more control over what you do later in the game. In a situation like this, it's the same thing. The elves imprison the dwarves. They take away their options, not just for being able to move around, but to be able to communicate. There are some things in life that are absolutely worth investing in. At the top of that list is yourself, your knowledge, your experiences, and what better way to extend your knowledge than with the learning of different languages. It might be something you don't think about very often, but when you can speak other languages, it opens the doors in your own mind to understanding things differently. It opens the possibility of interacting with people and going places that you never thought you would have gone. And that's part of why I'm so glad that Rosetta Stone is sponsoring the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, because we all know J.R.R. Tolkien was a master of multiple languages, and I would love to be as capable as he is, and I may never get there, but with Rosetta Stone, I can get a step further. They are the experts who will help you learn faster and retain the information longer. Plus, you can learn anywhere you are, on an app, on a desktop, anywhere. So don't wait. Unlock your learning potential right now. Lord of the Rings Lorecast listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And Bilbo in this situation gives them that power back. And because of this, Thorin's opinion of Bilbo shoots through the roof. He began to have a very high opinion of him indeed. And this is during the section where it talks about how he was about to give in and how he would have to give Thranduil a part of the share of the treasure, yet they haven't even gotten there yet. There's no guarantee they're going to succeed in this, but he didn't want to have to negotiate that away. And so in this situation, we have two big things that happen for Bilbo. First of all, he actually has to survive for weeks as a burglar. So this is a lot of experience that he never had previously. Secondly, it continues to build the trust with the dwarves. They all trusted Bilbo, it says here. Just what Gandalf had said would happen. You see, perhaps that was part of his reason for going off and leaving them. Gandalf knew. Bilbo needed the opportunity to grow on his own, and the dwarves needed the opportunity to learn to trust him. And then we get this line, but of course, as you have guessed, he did rescue his friends in the end, and this is how it happened. And I always have to point these out. Whenever Tolkien gives away what's about to happen in the text before it happens, he does this all the time. But yet, that is so strange to me. This doesn't reduce our enjoyment of his stories. This goes against the whole idea of like, oh, well, don't tell me spoilers. And studies have shown, I've looked into this a little bit, and this is just off the top of my head, but studies have shown that often if you give somebody a spoiler about a movie or a book they're about to read, it doesn't actually change in any noticeable or major way their enjoyment of that. In a study, in studies where people have done this and they've interviewed people on the backside, so of course they're self-reporting and all of that, but strangely enough, doesn't necessarily ruin the experience, even though a lot of people will claim that it does. Anyway, the story goes on, and when we get to this part, Bilbo had discovered a very interesting thing. The great gates were not the only entrance to the caves. And we get this entire description, and this is another one of those moments that Tolkien really gives us details. We can visualize this because of how well he gives us all of the details in this situation. Here, I'll read the whole thing because it's worth noting how clear and detailed this is, and yet it's most of a paragraph, but really this could have been a lot longer. It says, "A stream flowed under part of the lowest regions of the palace and joined the forest river some way further to the east, beyond the steep slope out of which the main mouth opened. Where this underground watercourse came from the hillside, there was a water gate. There, the rocky roof came down close to the surface of the stream, and from it a portcullis could be dropped right to the bed of the river to prevent anyone coming in or out that way. But the portcullis was often open, for a good deal of traffic went out and in by the water gate. If anyone had come in that way, they would have found himself in a dark, rough tunnel leading deep into the heart of the hill. But at one point, where it passed under the caves, the roof had been cut away and covered with great oaken trap doors. These opened upwards into the king's cellar." This gives you a very concise and very detailed understanding of how this underground river works, how they use mechanisms in order to make sure that things can't get in and out that aren't supposed to be coming in and out from the river source, but also how they're able to manage putting the barrels in through these trap doors on the floor and how all of that stuff works. It is all very visual. And concise. I mean, this, like I said, it's multiple sentences, but this could have been a lot more detailed and longer to say the same exact thing. And I've now said that a few times and realized the irony with which I have not followed that same ideal. But let's move on. Then he talks about barrels and how the barrels work for the wine delivery and all of that, which is important because it does two things. It explains to us the connection between the elves and the people who live in Lake Town. They have this trade agreement. They're sending wine in. And wine is interesting, and I'm going to get into this a little bit in the bonus episode here, but why wine? There's a reason. The elves are not just some people who live in the forest. They are, or at least Thranduil considers himself, royalty. This is a place where people drink wine, or at least the elves drink wine. And I looked into this a little bit. There isn't a ton of other wine drinking by elves in the series, but in this situation, it's important. And we'll get to that in a minute. So Bilbo is investigating this location and he gets kind of the beginning of an idea. He's thinking, maybe I can use this to help my friends escape. And I love the line here. At last he had the desperate beginnings of a plan. How many times in my life have I had the desperate beginnings of a plan that doesn't go anywhere? But in this situation, it goes somewhere. The evening meal had been taken to the prisoners. The guards were trampling away down the passages, taking the torchlight with them and leaving everything in darkness. This is one of those lines that leads me to believe that the dwarves were left in darkness for long periods. They didn't always just leave torches burning on the walls. They were underground. Torches were limited resources. It's not like just turning on a light. So the guards leave, and then we get this conversation. Bilbo is hearing the king's butler biting the chief of the guards goodnight, and this is one of those few details where we get just an elf talking to another elf. Here's how it goes. "Now come with me," he said, "and taste the new wine that has just come in. I shall be hard at work tonight, clearing the cellars of the empty wood, so let us have a drink first to help the labor. Very good, laughed the chief of the guards. I'll taste with you and see if it is fit for the king's table. There is a feast tonight, and it would not do to send up poor stuff. This happens again and again in Tolkien's writing, is that we have this idea in our heads of what elves are supposed to be like, or what orcs are supposed to be like, or whatever. But when we actually get to the conversations between them, they're way more down to earth than they seem. Whether that's orcs arguing over the labor and working for a boss that isn't great, or it's these elves who are doing the, I don't know, very human thing of like, well, we have an opportunity to take advantage of giving this wine a try, so why don't we look out for ourselves for a little bit here? They've got that kind of thing going on. And it makes sense. You can't just have elves singing songs and being silly and being merry, or being stoic and so focused on the fight against the Dark Lord and that sort of thing. Depending on both of those perspectives, which seem contradictory, there's this kind of middle path where they are regular people who do regular people things. And I don't know that you could say that Tolkien is to blame for this interpretation. I think it's more of we as readers and people who have been trained by the media that we've seen before have expectations that are brought with us. So when Tolkien says something like the elves were merry and singing, we go all the way to the side of like cartoon silly world. And then when we hear, you know, Feanor vowed vengeance on Morgoth, we go all the way to, I don't know, the most serious movies we've ever watched, especially like fantasy films where nobody ever smiles and everybody's super, super serious and intense. It's neither of those things. In fact, it's both of those things. In fact, that's how reality works. In a day, you can go from singing and dancing and doing silly things with your best friend or your kids or your family or whatever. And then you can also have a very serious conversation at work with somebody who you need to help get things done, or you're going to lose a lot of money or a client or something like that. We live in a world where it's both of those things. And it may also be, hey, there's some wine here. Maybe we should give it a try. And Tolkien understood this. He knew that everybody is way more dynamic and interesting than what we want to think about on paper. We look at people and we do this in the real world. We try to size them down to one thing, and then we're always surprised when they break out of that box. Well, maybe our boxes are too small. Maybe we're putting people in these prisons of our minds in a similar way to the dwarves being locked up underground. So there you go. Thanks for listening to my little aside. But Bilbo then follows the elves, and they enter this small cellar. They sit down at a table. They start drinking. They start laughing. And then we get this line. Luck of an unusual kind was with Bilbo then. Notice again. Luck. Was it the elves themselves that set up this situation, or was there a little bit more going on? And then it tries to justify what's going on here. It must be potent wine to make a wood elf drowsy, but this wine, it would seem, was the heady vintage of the great gardens of Dorwinion. And I'm going to talk about Dorwinion in the bonus episode. Basically, it's a place where wine is made, but the name might have some interesting connections to real world stuff. So we'll get into that in the bonus episode. But this was not meant for soldiers or servants, but for the king's feasts only and for smaller bowls, not for the butler's great flagons. This is an interesting thing because wine traditionally was weaker for the commoner and it was more potent, more alcoholic for the royalty. Why would that be? Well, sometimes it was because there was a different vintage. The actual wine itself was different, was made differently, was made to be more potent or more alcoholic. And of course, the royalty had the money to spend on that. But more often, based on the bit of research I was able to do, it was that the commoner's wine was more watered down. They tried to stretch it further because they weren't wealthy. So if you added more water to your wine, you could have more wine, theoretically. And so it wasn't for the commoners to be drinking these, I guess, more potent vintages in big flagons, which explains why the elves fall asleep, and they get drunk. And this is what gives Bilbo his opportunity. Very soon, the chief guard nodded his head. Then he laid it on the table. and fell fast asleep. All right, thanks for tuning in again. Before we get into the Patreon stuff, just a reminder, I will be at GCX 2025 this summer in Orlando, Florida. This is July 25th and 26th. You can go to the website and check it out. This is going to be a big game convention sort of thing for charity in support of St. Jude's Hospital for Children and St. Jude's Children Hospital, I guess is the full name. And it's going to be fun. I'll be hanging out, meeting and greeting people, doing some content creator-y stuff, maybe streaming, maybe getting some interviews with voice actors. There's video games to play. There's one of the nights everybody's going over to Universal Studios and going to be hanging out in the park. I don't know if I'll be doing that with everyone or not. It depends on how everything shakes out for my schedule, but I'm planning to be there. And if you would like to come take a little vacation, or if you happen to be nearby somewhere in Florida and you can go just kind of drive over for the day, any of that stuff, it's happening in just a few weeks. So come check it out. GCXevent.com. Again, GCXevent.com. If you're interested in checking out, going, signing up, any of that stuff. And let me know. Jump on the Discord. Send me a message on, comment on the Patreon episode if you're on there. However you want to let me know. And we will put together in the coming weeks just kind of a little group, probably a channel on the Discord about, hey, this is what's going on. This is where everybody can communicate. This is where we can plan to meet up and do all of that kind of stuff. And I'd love to meet you. I'd love to be able to shake some hands and see some people and meet face to face. So if you're able to do that, it's coming up on the 25th and 26th of July. Also, thank you to our newest patron, Tom G. Welcome to the Patreon. And thank you for all of your support on Patreon. And patreon.com/LOTRLorecast is where you can get ad-free episodes. You can get bonus episodes. I'm going to be going into a few different things about imprisonment in mythology and sources like that, but also think about a little bit more about wine and where they were getting their wine from, some other details. So stay tuned for that if you are on the Patreon. Also have to shout out all of our VIP patrons. Let's see if I can get through the list. AK Music Lover, Aldarian Was Right, Apollo, Averial, I always mess that up, Azul Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Brandy D, Captain Legolas, Turner, this is not a great day for talking, Cutter Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S., David M., Divide Madman, Fulcrum, Gerald CFC, Gimli A Break, Ginger Fury, Who On Is My Hero, Jezzer, KDS, Capenna, Lori B., Mason Weathertop, Matt, Party Snacks, Philip M., Richard J., Rosie Rosé, Single Ent, Looking for Ent Wives, The Bestest Boy, and TJT. Thank you so much for all of your support. Also, if you'd like to help out in other ways, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I'll read those out on future episodes. No new ones this week, which means I might get to read yours next week if you decide to do that. And that would be super helpful. And thanks for being here. I'm looking forward to GCX. And if you can make it, let me know. We'll go hang out. We'll grab a bite, play a video game. Who knows? But it should be fun. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week. And if you're tuning in for the bonus episode, I'll see you on the other side. And until next time, try not to get captured by elves, because they're just going to keep you in the dark and feed you okay food and not wine. I've done better endings. All right, I'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4-Day Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains June 6th through the 9th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.